When this happens in one of your company's stores...
What did they get called for? Because there are two black guys sitting here meeting me?
Yes, I didn't know.
Well, what did they do? What did they do? Did someone tell me what they did?
They didn't do anything. I saw the entire thing.
They didn't.
What did they do?
Nothing.
What do you do? That, of course, was the aftermath of an employee calling the police on two black men in a Philadelphia Starbucks on April 12th. Starbucks's answer to the incident is to close 8,000 stores today and provide racial bias training for thousands of its employees. And I've got two people here with me to share their thoughts. Heather McGee is the president of Demos, a progressive think tank, and an advisor to Starbucks on their anti-bias training. And Paul Butler is the Albert Brick Professor in Law at Georgetown University, a former prosecutor, and the author of Chokehold, Policing Black Men. Thank you both for joining me.
It's great to be here.
So, Heather, you're advising Starbucks pro bono. What's your philosophy going into this?
Well, Howard Schultz, the chairman and founder of Starbucks, called me a few days after the incident. And, you know, I was as appalled as anybody and certainly as any African-American watching the video. My first memory as a child is of being chased out of a penny candy store with my older brother because a white store manager thought we were going to steal something. So I knew, you know, that this is both a deeply American problem and something that Starbucks needed to deal with. I was frankly surprised that they were so willing to say from the outset, yes, this is an issue of racial bias. I was very surprised when Howard Schultz told me that he had an idea to close all their stores and do some sort of training. And what I said to him was, one, it's really important that this be pro bono. Brian Stevenson of the Equal Justice Initiative and Sherrilyn Ifill of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund were also asked to be advisors at that time. And I said, we have to be completely independent. You're coming outside of the corporate world in order to, you know, ask for some accountability and input and advice from people in the racial justice world. So we need to be on the other side of the line from you on this. And then the second is, this one day, while significant for a workforce that turns over 50 to 60% in a year, part-time workers, I mean, this is not the people who usually get the corporate diversity training, let me put it that way. It has to be just the launch of a multi-phase process that looks at this all quite systemically, even beyond what Starbucks does to also what Starbucks can use its leverage to influence in terms of the police.
And Heather, you said you were surprised. Paul, were you also surprised at the announcement or the decision that Starbucks made to do this?
I was thrilled that Starbucks is being accountable. It's understanding the issue is not a bad apple barista, but something that's more systemic. Starbucks is doing something that's very dramatic, that's inspiring this conversation. I think it's important that we talk about bias in all of its forms, implicit and explicit. And, you know, if I try to go for my cup of joe this afternoon and I see the stores closed, you know, and people have that experience, I think it redounds not just to the employees of Starbucks, but to the whole country.
And there was, I'm sure you both have seen the social media reaction to this. It's been mixed. I would say there have also been folks who have sort of eye-rolling and saying, well, what's one afternoon really going to do? Is this, you know, going to be effective? I mean, what do we know? Is one afternoon enough, Heather?
One afternoon is not enough to erase decades, in most cases, of ingrained stereotypes and negative associations with people of color, with women, with visibly poor people, with people with disabilities. But it is two things. One, it is an essential first step for a company that is now committed to making this the launch of a multi-phase process that's going to get much deeper with its management level employees, with its review and change of its policies and practices, you know, to undergo a racial equity organizational transformation, you really have to look at all aspects of the business. And they're willing to do that this first day is just a start. But I will say for the nearly 200,000 participants of this training, again, who are, you know, working and middle class folks who, many of whom are in college, have not finished their degrees or are not college bound, this 4 to 5 hours of being taught what, you know, to Professor Butler and I might be the basics of bias and stereotypes, where they come from in our history, what political and economic purpose they serve. Being given time to think about your own group identity and to run through scenarios and role playing, sadly, that's quite rare. And in a political climate and a media climate where stereotypes are being trafficked from the highest office of the land as if they are common sense, having a company tell you these stereotypes are actually something that you should divorce yourself from, that you should take a moment and pause when you see yourself making these associations, that you should work as a team to have systems and practices that mitigate not necessarily the bias associations, because that's very hardwired in our minds and it takes a lot of practice to undo them and create new, more positive associations, but certainly to make sure that those stereotypes don't create actions that have negative outcomes for your fellow employees and your customers.
And Heather, you mentioned, I'm curious, these are most of the sort of shop personnel that are going to get these trainings, but what about the highest levels of the organization?
Yeah, that was something that Sherilyn Eiffel and I really wanted to make clear from the beginning. You can't ask these part-time employees to do something that you're not willing to do yourself. And so the Starbucks leadership, the executives, the corporate management, the global leadership, in fact, have been doing work over the past few weeks, in addition to whatever they had done, you know, throughout their careers in terms of diversity training, but specifically have gone through the same curriculum that was developed for the nearly 200,000 partners. And there have also been early trial runs of different groups of partners across the country. I say partners because that's what Starbucks calls their employees. So different groups of employees across the country, because some areas are rural and mostly white, some areas are rural and mostly Black and Latino, they're suburban, they're urban areas. Starbucks is in 8,000 places, and so the context is different. And so it's been important for the company to do some trial runs in these different areas to see how the training has gone. And as anyone who has ever had what I think is the privilege to stop and focus on these core questions of identity can attest to, this time spent in fellowship with other human beings, thinking about what makes us human, what connects us and what divides us, can be really quite profound.
Having covered this and having lived many of these experiences, I think there's a sort of suspicion around this notion of quote-unquote implicit bias. And I want to play you guys a call that we got.
Implicit bias doesn't exist. The only bias is in the recipient's mind. They believe they're being, someone is biased against them, but it's just on them.
Paul, your thoughts on that?
So some of our ideas about race are unconscious. If you notice an African-American man walking behind you in the street, you may feel more anxious. You don't feel like you're a racist. You may not even be aware that you're having these feelings. I think the value of implicit bias is it makes people less defensive when they talk about race. If, like the song says, everybody's a little bit racist, then maybe we shouldn't feel that stigmatized when we acknowledge our own sometimes complicated feelings about race. It also gets us away from thinking about racism as only the Ku Klux Klan and Nazis marching in Charlottesville. If we know that that nice barista at our local coffee shop has some baggage, I think that that helps us think about the way race actually works. Another concern I have is that implicit bias can sound less harmful than explicit, but the effects on people of color can be just as bad. So I'm a tall, dark, Black dude, and implicit bias makes the police more likely to see my cell phone as a gun. And so it has the same kinds of consequences, whether it's implicit or explicit.
And one of the things I've, you know, in my work in this space, I've been surprised by is why there's so much difficulty or resistance or lack of context around race in America today, where even things like videos that we're seeing don't necessarily connect. Are we seeing a change? Are more Americans becoming more aware of these quote-unquote implicit biases, or are we still resistant to recognizing that?
I think this is a really important question. First of all, we are seeing a moment for the past 5 years of rising racial consciousness among people of color, I will say, right? Not everybody was raised to see the world through this lens, even if they come from families of color, and also white Americans. I think we can't downplay how much more this is a conversation in our media, how much more you have interest in these questions of equity and inclusion and diversity from all corners of our society, the Black Lives Matter movement, the movement to protect immigrants in this country have changed public consciousness. Importantly, that video in Philadelphia was recorded by a white person and shared outrage of white customers in the store, and they immediately saw it as an issue of police and racial bias. So this is definitely, we are at a moment of a heightened racial consciousness, and there's been great progress that has been made in terms of a culture shift because of it. That said, there is a cultivated narrative that puts the blame for disparities on people of color, that says that racist stereotypes like African Americans are dangerous and Muslims are terrorists and immigrants are criminals are not stereotypes, but they're rather common sense. And those negative narratives serve a political and an economic purpose to divide working and middle class people of different races from one another and put in office a very, very fringe political agenda. That's what we see today, obviously. But when our number one rated cable news network has those kinds of reverse racism, it's the people who are talking about racism who are actually the racists, while they traffic in stereotypes from sun up to sundown, you have to recognize that people like the caller that we heard are being fed on a daily basis the idea that racism is all in the heads of people of color, and people of color are trying to somehow use claims of racism to their own personal advantage, when we know that racism is as real and as pervasive in this society as virtually any other force, and it must be addressed wholeheartedly.
And I'm curious about what your thoughts are on whether this focus on Starbucks needs to be on Starbucks. I've also seen folks who say, well, you know what, just frequent Black-owned coffee shops and put your dollars elsewhere. Do you agree?
I think that everybody has a responsibility for addressing bias. And for Starbucks, it's just good customer service. It's the way that it should do business. So I'm actually surprised to hear that wonderful people like Heather and Brian Stevenson and Sherilyn Eiffel are doing this for free, pro bono. I mean, if Starbucks found out that one of its shops had some toxic waste, they would call someone to clean it up. And that's the cost of doing business. And the reason I think it's important to understand it as a business practice is it shouldn't be like this day is kind of like the equivalent of Martin Luther King Day or Black History Month, a time when we sing Kumbaya and think seriously about race and then move on. There are going to be issues at Starbucks tomorrow and the next day. And again, I think we have to think of those in a same way that we think of other kinds of business problems. Beyond and outside of Starbucks, though, there's also a structural problem with the way that society responds. So it's not just that people are biased, it's that there's a whole state apparatus that responds. So anyone can call 911 and get people with guns and the power to arrest to respond to their bias. And I guess the other kind of unfortunate thing is it's not just white folks who have these kinds of biases. We all do. And so, yes, we should frequent African-American and Latino-owned coffee shops, but that's not going to by itself solve the problem any more than hiring more Black police officers makes things better for Black folks on the streets.
So do you think it's too idealistic, this Starbucks approach, or do you think this might get other companies to step up to the plate?
I think it's a very important first step. Mad props to Starbucks for taking responsibility, but it's just that. It's a first step.
Heather McGee is the president of Demos, a progressive think tank, and an advisor to Starbucks on their anti-bias training. And Paul Butler is the Albert Brick Professor in Law at Georgetown University, a former prosecutor, and the author of Chokehold, Policing Black Men. Thank you so much for being with me today.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
Okay, guys, we have an assignment for you, some homework. Head to thetakeaway.org/bias. And we have a link there to the widely used Harvard Implicit Association Test. We want you to take one of those tests, anyone you want, and tell us what you think. Were you surprised at the results? Did you think it was a fair assessment? Were you disappointed? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or tweet us at The Takeaway, or if you're so inclined, tweet me at Tanzina Vega and tell us what you found.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.